everyone, welcome to our weekly edition of the Out of the Woods Threat Hunting Podcast. This is Scott Poley here with Tom Costura.
Hello, everybody.
And this weekly segment features the top stories that threat hunters need to be thinking about, as well as our thoughts on the subject and hunting strategies. So with that, let's dive into the top threat hunting headlines for the week of May 12th, 2025. So Tom, what do you got for us today?
All right, starting out this week, got an article from Proofpoint titled TA-406 Pivots to the Front. So TA-406 is a North Korean state-sponsored threat actor. You might also know them as Opel Sleet or Kani. And they've shifted their focus to targeting Ukrainian government entities as of February of this year. So the group's objective appears to be gathering strategic intelligence related to Ukraine's political landscape and their military responses amid the ongoing Russian invasion. Some of the tactics they're leveraging for their campaign alongside of the phishing side employs free mail accounts to impersonate members of fake think tanks, such as the Royal Institute of Strategic Studies is one, to kind of aim to give credibility to their phishing emails. Their emails are often referenced recent Ukrainian political events to encourage recipients to kind of engage or click with the content. The phishing emails contain links to mega file hosting services, which lead to the download of password protected RAR archives. And then on extractions, these archives deploy CHM files containing embedded PowerShell scripts that execute recon commands like your ipconfig/all, system info, and so on. The collected data is Base64 encoded and transmitted over HTTP post request to the attacker-controlled domains. And the persistence is achieved by creating a batch file. In this case, it was a state.bat to the app data directory and then set on install to run at startup, something we see pretty commonly. Some of the campaigns, there were some alternative kind of infection vectors. So some of the campaigns utilize HTML attachments that, when open, download zip files instead. These ones contain benign looking PDF documents and then also a malicious LNK file, something, you know, we also talk about quite a bit. So this LNK file, again, executes Base64 encoded PowerShell scripts. And those scripts establish scheduled tasks, particularly in this campaign named Windows Themed Update. And those drop JavaScript encoded files to help maintain their persistence. So prior to the malware development, TA-406 sent fake Microsoft security alerts from Proton mail accounts claiming unusual sign-in activity. And then the recipients were directed to verify their accounts via links to compromised domains. And one of the examples they gave is jetmf.com with a goal of credential harvesting. So they have a historical presence as far as credential harvesting is concerned. And then strategic implications. So talking about some of the bullet points here, you know, this activity from TA-406 suggests an effort to assess Ukraine's resolve and strategic decisions in the conflict with Russia. The intelligence likely aids North Korea in evaluating the risks to its forces and determining the extent of support to provide to Russia. And then, you know, kind of lastly on this one, from a threat hunter perspective, there's more evidence here to common techniques like identifying PowerShell encoded command use. We talk about so much. But additionally, we do see the call out for commands to establish the scheduled tasks. This is one to identify in your environment as well, from my opinion. You know, a known way to do administrative or deployment steps, of course, but identifying non-standard use of the SCH tasks in command line in your environment might be a good way to go, even for a soft hunt. But all of that said, just kind of touching on all these points, you know, what did you think of this one, Scott? Anything you'd like to add?
So, you know, I like we've talked in the past in a lot of our episodes, I like to focus on typically persistence, discovery, and then execution. Like, those are the three verticals I usually focus on. And, you know, common things that administrators run, but do not run all the time, which always stand out as interesting executions for discovery, is, you know, they do the ipconfig/all and system info. And then they use some WMI commands to gather things, which WMI isn't always as telling, depending on how it's run, for you to capture some of those things. But I'm just seeing those other commands, just paying attention what systems those things are coming from. And then if there's any other things, like, you can almost step that back. You see weird discovery, you can always step it back. Well, okay, what kind of PowerShell, what kind of command prompt or WScript or any of those scripting based executions preceded that or are ongoing on that box, which may show like elevated use of. Always good from an investigation standpoint. Obviously, you know, still seeing the LNK file executing things. In this case, it's PowerShells. Well, sometimes those are hard to trace. That's how that actually gets executed. But one of the things you will see that's common in a lot of PowerShell execution that's used or has to be driven from malicious origin is the execution policy flag bypass. So in this case, they just do the dash EP bypass. I do think find it's funny that they, when they're referencing PowerShell as the argument for what to execute, they do varying cases. So if you look how they spell PowerShell, they have lowercase p, capital O, W, lowercase e, and so forth. Obviously, they're trying to take advantage of things that look for the exact naming of the true executable, even though it's case insensitive when you call executables in Windows. Linux is not that way. And so sometimes that's just a way to defeat some basic detection stuff that may exist, especially if you're building, like if you have detection engineers building things in security ops, a lot of times they may not be thinking of that. So they build something that works and they're not thinking of all the different ways that this can be leveraged. And that's one common thing that gets overlooked. The other thing that they don't show here, but in past things that I've looked at, when they have PowerShell, that it actually initiates a scheduled task. From what I've seen when threat actors do this, it's never just calling like one command to initiate the scheduled task. There's multiple commandlets associated with the scheduled tasks to basically set it up, register it, and so forth. So those things potentially could stand out very easily, especially if you have script block logging and it's all happening in one place. And then anytime you have scheduled task running something like WScript or some other kind of command interpreter, it's suspect or something worth looking into. So those were just some key things, that I'd say are basic, avenues of attack on Windows systems that people should be paying attention to. So, yeah.
Yeah, good points. And it's worth echoing. I know we do talk about and we hit on a lot of those similar techniques, but there's a reason. They're commonly reused so much. And we say that, but, you know, always going to echo them when we see them, see how people are utilizing them in recent incursions and things like that. But, yeah. What do you got next for, Scott?
So, yeah, I have an article from Jennings, I guess is how you say that. It begins with a G. But it's called, the title of it, it's Analysis of APT-37 Attack Case Disguised as a Think Tank for National Security Strategy in South Korea, Operation Toy Box Story. You get the name Toy Box because some of the files they dropped were, you know, toybox.bat, toybox.dat, so forth. But basically, APT-37, also known as Reaper, in March of 2025, they launched a bunch of spear phishing campaigns targeting several activist groups focused on North Korea in general. So this is a North Korean actor. Obviously, that makes sense they'd be targeting in that way. And the email really contained the Dropbox link that actually led people to download an LNK. And in this case, the LNK was contained in a zip file. So it was really a zip file. LNK file hit. LNK also would run PowerShell. So it's interesting to see a different actor from the same nation state leveraging similar techniques. I think that's kind of a common thing. And then that PowerShell, through all the different things that it does and runs, will eventually pull down Rokrat or Rockrat, I guess is how you'd say it, since it's a rat. So it's just the malware they drop that gives them the access. So something that was really interesting, just in some of the execution there. I mentioned earlier in your campaign where they did the case changing of PowerShell to try to bypass detections. Well, here's another way, and it works in Windows, is when they were actually calling PowerShell, they use a wildcard. So instead of it being PowerShell.exe written out when they put the path in there, they have the path they wanted to call. And then for the name for PowerShell.exe, they did a star rshell.exe. So the system naturally will look for what that could match to and runs the first instance of that find, which in this case will be PowerShell. Another interesting way to bypass some of those, you know, detection rules, right? If you're saying, hey, we're looking for this to be run, And you're looking at command line potentially, that might not show up. The other thing that I thought was really interesting in this case was they ran SysWow 64 PowerShell, which would mean like the 32-bit version. I don't know if this is for compatibility reasons or whatnot, but that would be weird behavior as well. If I saw that, and I know that my systems are 64-bit, and so that would make sense. I don't know if maybe certain control policies and things that prevent PowerShell from running, maybe those won't directly apply to the 32-bit version. I'm not really sure, but something notable, right, to pay attention to. And then anytime, to be honest, when you see encoding of anything, especially when running PowerShell, they have their whole block of where it has the dash encoding flag or argument, and then it's byte. So it's like byte-based encoding. Also not typical of most PowerShell, even encoding for running legitimate things. So just seeing that, you might have to pull that out of PowerShell script block logging. And maybe, I'm not certain, if you're running the 32-bit version of PowerShell, if it's not version 5 or higher, I don't think script block logging or PowerShell logging works. So maybe that is a sidestep, another way why they are sidestepping that way. I haven't tested this while quickly pulling this research, but something to note. And the other interesting thing is, the C2 that Rock Rat uses, they use a technique that's called living off trusted sites. And so what does that mean? They're basically using Dropbox or pCloud, Yandex, OneDrive, Google Drive, right, as examples to do this communication, to communicate back and send commands. And this, I think, is not uncommon, especially for North Korea, because North Korea, if I remember this correctly, only really have like a Class C block or Class B block, but like they have only one subnet. I forgot what class is. It's big enough for them to use effectively, but really easy to just outright block North Korea from an IP space perspective. So I think they have to get creative as far as what services they use for C2. And so obviously using cloud-based services is a great way, because that's just going to be effective and allowed almost everywhere. So they use those, but the thing to take note on is if you do have web-based proxy data, because they're leveraging C2 over this, you're going to see a lot of API callbacks, right? Because that's what they're leveraging for the C2 is API. And so you might see some patterns that might stand out that kind of dial you into, hey, this box is communicating a lot here in non-standard ways, potentially. And it doesn't look like it's driven by, say, a browser or whatnot. So that's something else to kind of pay attention to. The one thing I also like is some of their social engineering stuff. They're taking effects or utilizing real events, right? So like some of the titling was like Trump 2.0 era prospects in South Korea's response. Another one was information on North Korean troops deployed to Russia. So, and then they obviously have the fake invitation to the National Security Conference, as another way to draw people in. So using real events that, like I said, it can also be controlled. I've talked about Russia doing the same thing with Ukraine, where they would basically do something physically, stage real, and then use phishing alongside with that to initiate some cyber attacks to gain access. It's a great use of both resources to make both basically effective. So they did a lot of that too. I thought was really interesting. So yeah. What were your takes?
So echoing a couple things, the one that I always find interesting, this is kind of goes into that thing that I've been echoing more and more as we've done more shows of the know your environment, right? So I think the use and the leveraging of Dropbox, connections to Dropbox, things like that, so that the whole living off trusted sites tactic, I think there's a broad sweep that you can do relative to the know your environment side of the thought process. I say that because that's absolutely something I've done in my past and yielded really solid results from it. I mean, while these are trusted sites, knowing, you know, should your environment be connecting out to them? Typically, is there reasons for it? There's a lot of questions, a lot of, you know, soft kind of unstructured hunting you can do there to see what's going on there. So definitely something to echo again. They did mention also, I thought it was worth noting, that this group specifically has also been involved in various zero-day attacks, looking at, IE vulnerabilities and other things, but they've also have done operations that expanded beyond Windows. So we're talking Android-based stuff, so APK files, and also targeting Mac OS users. So definitely keep aware of that. And then the last thing, I know you had mentioned about the kind of call for the wild card for PowerShell, and that we do often, and it is nice, it is awesome when we can kind of like script that in to look at like more of the command line field to see the actual commands that are executed. I think there was something to point there too, at least maybe if it's not specifically tying in, but I do think it's relevant. Depending on your tooling, the thing to consider there is you can aid yourself in understanding the stuff that's being used when you kind of look at that parent-child process piece in particular, right? So maybe they're misspelling something in the command line thing, but if you're looking in your whether you're hunting in the tool that allows you to, of course, it's how the tool's structured and the data's parsed, but you look at things like, your source versus target fields for the process, your principal process, another thing that's named parent sometimes, just something of note that I think is worth adding. So you kind of have that multi-pronged approach to hunting these kinds of things.
Yeah. All good points.
Yeah.
All right. What do you got next?
All right, jumping on the next item on the docket. So we got an article from the Google Threat Intel Group. Cold Driver using new malware to steal documents from Western targets and NGOs. So Cold Driver, it's also known as Star Blizzard, is a Russian government-backed threat actor that traditionally focuses on credential phishing targeting against like NATO governments, NGOs, former intelligence and diplomatic officials. But Cold Driver has now incorporated a new malware. It's called Lost Keys. And we're going to talk about Lost Keys a little bit here. So Lost Keys is designed to steal files from hard-coded list of extensions and directories. Relative to like system recon, it collects system information and details about running processes and then transmits that data back to the attackers as part of the flow. There's also a very keen selective deployment. So the malware is deployed in highly selective cases, it seems, indicating its use against high-value targets only. So some of the infection chain and delivery methods, we're looking at the attack beginning with lures to a website featuring a fake CAPTCHA. The user interaction, after verifying that CAPTCHA, the users are prompted to execute a PowerShell command that's been copied to their clipboard and aimed to be opened in a Windows run prompt and kind of copy, paste, and ran. So this is a tactic and style known as click fix, or the click fix technique, something we've talked about a little bit before. And it's obviously been gaining steam this year. So the second stage retrieval, the initial PowerShell script fetches and executes a second stage payload. This second stage calculates an MD5 hash of the display resolution of the device. And if that MD5 is one of three specific values, it will stop execution. Otherwise, it will move on to stage three. Most likely, this is intended for defense evasion, specifically looking at preventing detonation in VMs. Definitely worth mentioning. This stage, the third stage, is a Base64 encoded blob, which decodes out to more PowerShell, and it retrieves multiple files, including a VBS script, which acts as a decoder, whose responsibility is to decode the second file in the stage three. The decoder is one of the unique, it has one of the unique keys, and the second key is stored deeper in stage three, and the keys are used in a substitution cipher on that encoded blob and are unique to each infection chain. So definitely interesting points. Finally, Lost Keys is deployed to steal files from a hard-coded list of extensions, as I kind of mentioned, as well as collecting all of the various system level information and running processes as well that it can get. And again, all of which are forwarded off to the attacker. So some of the points here, the recent targets, current and former advisors to Western governments and military journalists, think tanks, NGOs, and pretty much all individuals connected to Ukraine. Intelligence collection in support of Russian strategic interests seems to be the core operational goal here. And some of the historic activities around this, previously they were linked to hack and leak campaigns targeting officials and an NGO specifically in the UK. So talking threat hunting, one item I pulled out of this one is the identification of the recon actions. I thought this one was, it's low hanging fruit, but I still think it's worth mentioning So you're looking for command line in where you're seeing instances of those recon items writing out to a file. So for instance, you're seeing like system info command with a greater than caret pointing to a temp or a dot text file or something like that. One example. You could also look for the same kind of file write activity for ipconfig all, netview, task list, a bunch of others you can mention, but kind of that recon command being ran and then putting the output to a file. Definitely something that I wouldn't think is standard, although it is, and it can be used again in an administrative function. I can't imagine that's super common and should be relatively easy to identify in your environment as something to at least to dig into and call it suspicious. But yeah, any points you have on this one, Scott?
Yeah, so, you know, there's a couple of things that I thought were really interesting. One was like the targeting, right? Because it's very clear that it was to gather information, but it felt more like it was gathering more information about people and what people do than about like if you were to gather information from a corporation.
Almost one, like creating a target list, right?
Right. Or like, you know, interesting target list, or like how to prepare for future attacks or leverage, or, you know, see what the next, you know, help plan your attacks out, you know, like that kind of stuff, right? It's more like the collect the plan. Kind of like, what is it, that vertical that we never can really see is like building capabilities. I feel like it kind of falls into that a little bit. But the reason why I say this, one, is because a ClickFix, right? It obviously has to go after a person for that to even work. But two, the other thing is their defense evasion, right? I think the calculated NB5 hash of display resolutions, and they said there was like one of three specific values. So that means they're looking at basically three common display resolutions, probably 1080p, 720 p, whichever that is, right? Or 4K, right? I would assume. So probably very basic resolutions. And why I find that interesting is that pretty much renders a lot of VMs, which in this case, obviously they're trying to get around sandboxes, right? If someone tries to test this stuff in a sandbox. But there's a lot of server infrastructure that you're not going to care about that, right? Servers that hold or run information. So that part is also interesting to me, because clearly if they obviously weren't using ClickFix as a technique, this malware wasn't ever really meant to run on servers based on its current development. So that part's interesting. And another thing, they didn't really mention a lot of the technical details that I felt like they probably had and they didn't call it out, but they said, you know, there's a base64 encoded blob, right, that decodes to more PowerShell. And then that PowerShell retrieves and decodes some final payloads. Well, PowerShell is going to retrieve thing. It's going to do the one of, you know, three or so many methods to download more payloads, which, you can research how PowerShell could do that. And you'll find like the one in, you know, three or five ways to do that. So they probably did it in that way in some capacity. So that's something you could potentially research and look for, just to kind of cover down on some of those things. And then obviously if they're encoded, depending on if they're like encrypted versus just encoded, you know, there's ways to even pick up on that. But then they mentioned another payload they pulled down was a WBS file, you know, Visual Basic. And so when we talked about process chaining, they didn't mention it here, but if they are going to successfully run the VBS that PowerShell pulls down and executes, that means PowerShell is going to be kicking off either WScript or CScript, more than likely WScript, because there's not going to be a live active console. And so that's another way where you can actually look at that chain where it's suspicious, right? So no matter how tricky some of these things try to get, sometimes there's just things that stand out every time. And they're kind of the same with every attack, kind of feels like, right? So like I said, these are just easy, quick wins. That when paying attention to these patterns, I think are very beneficial. So yeah, those are the things that stood out to me the most.
Yeah, good points, man. What do you got last on the docket for this week?
So yeah, ClickFix again, right? And I think what's interesting here is we're seeing the APT use of ClickFix, because you would think something as low hanging as getting someone to copy and paste something would be more like your crimeware stuff. Well, but I think there's proof in the pudding that it's effective if advanced persistent threats do it. But it also, we mentioned this earlier amongst ourselves, that, you know, it's also easier to develop if you know it's going to be reliable for someone just to put your command directly in and figuring out how to get them to like download something and potentially get through all this tooling that you have to, the defenses that are there. It just bypasses so much of the development lifecycle and the getting past defense and defense evasion. So it's just really impactful that way. But this one, it is a Hunt.io article blog, and it's APT-36 style click fix attack spoofs Indian ministry to target Windows and Linux. So this one's interesting because it actually has Linux click fix in it, which haven't seen too much of because I don't know too many people that leverage Linux as a user base. Nothing wrong with that, but not commonly seen. So basically, it's a APT-36 is a Pakistan-aligned threat actor. They usually have long-standing focus on Indian government, military, and diplomatic targets. They've repeatedly used .NET-based malware or HTA delivery with the MSHTA execution. And they commonly clone login or press releases for some of their phishing or credential harvesting. And the infrastructure frequently includes typo squatting or misuse of legitimate services. And they commonly have publicly visible scripting errors. So they're kind of like, I'm assuming when you clone things to use in your attacks, you probably create a lot of errors because you're doing things really fast if you're trying to stay current with current events. So that happens a lot too. So in this case, their initial landing page was a fake ministry press release. And, you know, this obviously goes alongside the current events, right? You know, India and Pakistan have been launching kinetic strikes against each other. So there's obviously conflict going on. And nowadays, you would expect to see cyber-related things. And like we've seen with the Russia-Ukraine, like I mentioned earlier, it's very common for the cyber-based phishing to be themed based on the attacks that are currently going on and kind of control both. But they basically try to recreate the sites that would have some embedded scripting and stuff. The one thing that was interesting is the clone portal source code, based on looking at it, revealed the page had been created by something called HTTrack, which is a publicly available website copying tool. I was kind of curious in looking into this because it's interesting to see what, when you want to clone a page, what gets picked up and what doesn't for cloning it. So interesting tool. So obviously it leaves some footprints or fingerprinting behind when it does those things. And then based on the metadata that was cloned, it looked like the site that was cloned was occurred earlier in March 2025. So you can kind of see the time span on which they had that. So just like most click fixes, right, they had CAPTCHAs. They have a CAPTCHA that basically it will look to see if it's Windows based, and they have one that looks if it's Linux. So the Linux one, it's interesting. So they misspelled robot, no big deal, right? But they basically is a single blue button that appears on the web page that says, I'm not a robot. You're supposed to click it. And by clicking it, it essentially copies shell commands silently to your clipboard. And then it gives you directions on how to paste that in. So in this case, since you're on Linux, you hold Alt F2. It should pull up the command prompt. You do Control V to put it in there, and then you enter. Press enter to run it. Now, I've talked about it before, and this is what I love about Linux and looking at attacks like this when files or payloads get downloaded, is that by natively, they're not executable. So same thing here. Even though they make you go through this step to download everything, as part of the scripts, it also runs chmod, you know, changing the permissions of the file. And in this case, it's adding a plus X as the argument, which makes it executable, which they have to do in order to then run that to follow up with everything. So that's how their click fix works. And they also, in the process, they throw up some benign image to make it look like something is going on kind of thing. Windows, similar type of thing. One of the things they copy, there's a JavaScript functionality that will copy things to your clipboard. And then you paste those in there. And in this case, it's like they said, they like to use HTA files. Well, in this case, they're using MSHTA to basically call a PHP file that will then execute whatever the JavaScript malicious payload is. So that's kind of how they're leveraging CliffFix. But you know, this one was interesting because one, it's leveraging Linux, depending on who's going to whatever. And what they have to do to get around that. And then obviously they kind of, you know, like if you profile an actor long enough on what they know or usually lean on, they still use the HTA files for their click fix approach as well. And so you can kind of see some of those things. So yeah, just kind of interesting to see there's a lot of click fix style techniques out there. And the approach is pretty similar. And the payloads are the only thing that maybe changed slightly after the fact, but it's worth noting. So what were your thoughts?
So stepping a little bit to the left of the article itself, and we're talking about the ClickFix idea, this one's fascinated me, and I'm curious what you think. For a long time in the security field, there's always been this large talk about, you know, training people for social engineering and phishing. And we've gone through, you know, decade plus worth of variant trainings, and you know, they tend to follow a lot of the similar playbook or, you know, what they want to teach you. And the ClickFix thing goes so left of those trainings. It's very interesting to me. The more, maybe it's more focused at the human mentality around this, of how these are as successful as they have been or have shown to be over, you know, the course of the last handful of months. You know, I'm kind of curious, what do you think? Because I have a notion on why they're working, but it's really just throwing spaghetti at the wall. It's fascinating to me that a relatively more complex pathway to make something, or to, you know, versus clicking a link, right? Like clicking a link is super easy. Tricking people into clicking a link is super easy. We've even seen before with things like Quackbot, where they, you know, they put links hard-coded or you know, straight text links into an email and people copy and paste them out into a browser kind of thing. They're not even clickable. But now you have where you're actually running variant commands that I would imagine the typical user doesn't fully understand, yet they're following through with it. It's a very interesting topic of why this works. You get what I'm saying?
Like it's the social experiment, right? Like why people, well, what's interesting here too is the first version of ClickFix, if I remember, was getting someone to actually copy all the command out, which is just crazy because if they're looking at what they're copying and they're not technical, they'd be like, I don't know what any of this does, but it's a lot to copy. Now they're using embedded like JavaScript and things to automatically copy whatever needs to be copied to your clipboard. So all you have to worry about is just opening the right thing and pasting it. And they give you those directions. So they kind of bypass the whole trying to not put weird things in front of people as much as possible so that they don't think about it too much, right?
I think that's my point, like, there, because it's so fascinating to me that makes sense, right? Like, I understand that piece, but then you also have, like, okay, we'll run these verification steps. Press Alt plus F2, then press Control plus V, and then press Enter. Like, you know, you have a predominant workforce or people in variant you know, environments that have almost certainly gone through some level of phishing training, and you kind of get harped on and beat on a lot that, you know, don't click links you don't know, as a very sad example. And you're trained pretty heavily on this, and I think it's pretty common knowledge, even though it still works because humans are going to human, right? But now you have this more complicated factor where it's not like don't click the link you don't know, like don't be pressing combinations of keys on data and emails that you don't. It's really fascinating that this is so effective. I can't help but think about it more.
Yeah, it's hard because we want people to behave like robots because we think they would do the right thing every time, but then you take a step back and we're like, no, really what we want people to do is just like think for themselves. You know, like, I don't know. Right. But like, you know, if you were to somehow, someone was as paranoid where like, if you click the wrong thing, $1,000 might get deducted from your bank account. You'll hesitate every time. Right. If you knew that would cost, like, it just like things like that. it's one thing if people don't know the attack even exists. That just means there's this poor training. But once someone knows these attacks do exist and they're able to fall for them, I know it's still not 100% because you have to be in the right state of mind sometimes to see some of these things. But yeah, it's, but then I, like even when we talked about after they follow through with click fix, there's so many technical things to identify something weird happened that were also missing. If you know what I mean? So
yeah,
I think it's like, to me, it's still a failure on twofold because, if you don't see the technical things that are also obviously bad when you look at them, and there's definitely telemetry in a lot of the cases I've looked at that you could say this is worth investigating. Like you don't know exactly what's bad, but worth looking into. It just shows that you can't completely blame the person in this regard, right? If the technical people can't identify that, there's another problem to potentially address, whatever that may be. Maybe they're over indebted with alerts and that seems small. Maybe it doesn't alert at all. Like who knows what the cause is for that either. But that's the constant balancing act, right? Is you have that defensive depth where people are your front line, and then technology is your back line in a lot of aspects. So, or maybe it's kind of like technology people, then technology like sandwiched in there, depending on how you set things up. But yeah, it just comes down to like, why can we not solve cybersecurity? You know, it just cracks me up.
Yeah, this one just always, it just feels like we've gone backwards and there's something that happened that made us go backwards. I'm the forefront of it, right? I don't want to pretend I know what everybody's mentality is behind it because, you know, you can understand the human errors in a lot of things, right? People can get inundated with work and can be working too fast through emails and click a link, but this takes a few more steps. You would think there'd be some triggers in your brain that would say, okay, wait, I'm doing something I don't typically do. I don't fully understand what I'm doing, but I'm continuing to do it anyway.
I think that's also the culture of what CAPTCHA's trained us to do, because CAPTCHA was supposed to help protect websites and validate people. But I don't know if you remember when CAPTCHA was being rolled out, it constantly was evolving, you know, like every time you went to a new site, CAPTCHA was something different. It was like, we'll pick the picture. Okay. We'll type in the text. Okay. We'll listen to the audio. Okay. Or, you know, so there's always, so I feel like that in itself, because we didn't have a fully polished solution that had been tested against and validated, that now you run into where people are like, oh, it's just the new CAPTCHA, you know, like this is what we have to do now to prove I'm not a robot. Right. And maybe that's kind of our own fault as security technology enthusiasts to say, hey, we're trying to make something better. We don't have the answer. Let's just roll something out that kind of works, or before we fully understand it or whatever. And we kind of set people up for failure as well. So I don't know.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about it that way. That's a pretty good point, actually. I'm glad I asked the question though, because I didn't even consider that, you know, we've kind of been trained to react to those kinds of actions, and it's just playing on that a little bit. So good point.
Yeah. Well, cool. I think that kind of closes out this weekly edition. So I want to thank everyone for joining our Out of the Woods Threat Hunting podcast. Looking forward to syncing up next time. And with that, it closes out our top threat hunting headlines for the week of May 12th, 2025. Happy hunting.
Happy hunting.